This episode of The Gendernaut is brought to you by The Economist.
Women have a little more availability to discuss their shame than men. They have the ability to talk about with other women, maybe with their mothers. There's a societal permission for women to have a little more space, though it's not easy, but it's a little more easy. Men tend to get more shamed for talking about their shame.
That's the coach and consultant, Rob Kandel.
We're talking about male shame on this episode of The Gendernaut, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. We're your hosts. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman. And this week we've got the first of a two-part interview exploring male shame.
Men have shame. Women may or may not know that because men act like they do not have shame. Men act like we have it all together. Everything is cool. Stoic faces. Everything is fine. And instead, there's a lot of stuff going on inside of us.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Gendernaut. So in case you're new, I'm going to give you a little bit of info on how this show works. On this podcast, we try to figure out a gender-related dilemma each week. We see if we can untangle a few issues and maybe even solve some problems, too. I'm Naz. I'm a journalist. I'm based in London. My co-host, Jonathan, is in D.C.
It is steamy hot for both of us, given that we are under blankets and there is a heat wave. But most important heat wave is British football.
Yeah, English football. You've got to be accurate. Otherwise, the Scots and the Welsh and stuff are going to get super pissed at you, man.
All right. Well, you know, listen, it won't be the first time that there has been entire nations raging after me.
Dude, Matt, it's crazy out here. So on Tuesday night, I was out in central London and everyone was like dancing in the middle of the street. And then all the buses like had to go out of service because no one was going nowhere. And then the riot police came. It was wicked. I wasn't in London yesterday for the quarterfinals, but I hear it was mental. So, dude, man, exciting stuff.
Very exciting stuff. And I was thrilled to watch Croatia beat Russia. And, you know, it's football fever, not American football, friends.
But, you know, I get quite sentimental over sport and like men in teams doing collaborative things.
I mean, listen, I certainly have many female friends that are just ecstatic that there are young hunky men who are taking their shirts off.
No, that's not the reason. I'm just like, oh, are these men actually working together?
Collaboration teamwork, sure.
I'm like, oh, and then also like, you know, like teams where the coach is like really father figure-y, I get super sentimental, you know, when they're like, my lads did X or whatever, and I'm like, oh, there's this nice like paternal protection, which I'm like, yeah, that's really lovely. That it brings lovely. Out my like it brings out my really sentimental side.
That's funny. So we also got a shout out from and a great article from Financial Times, which for Americans is the pinkish orangey paper that you see in your airport lounges.
Big thanks to Fiona Sturgis. She reviewed us in the FT. Yeah, it was a really nice review. And I really like her work in general. So I felt really stoked reading that.
This is fantastic. So for all of our friendly listeners, please leave us reviews in Apple Podcasts or wherever you are getting this podcast. Please leave us a review. It helps other people hear about the podcast, and we appreciate all the support.
So in the FT review, Fiona Sturgis said, while the topics are approached in the spirit of fair-mindedness and mutual respect, conversations can become heated and agreement isn't always reached. This is very much the show's appeal, which made me very excited because it made me think we need to have a few more fights.
So you're just itching for an argument.
Yeah, I was just like, yeah.
Fantastic.
See, this is what the people want. Let's have some
this
more
fights.
This
is what the people want. Oh, goodness. We have a potential fight in our midst, on the horizon. Do we want to start announcing? Or do we just want to start dropping hints show after show and people will just have to just listen in? Drop like one hint a show.
I'm going to be speaking to Jordan Peterson soon. We're going to be talking about men and purpose. He's got a lot of very interesting ideas, so that should be great. If you've got thoughts or questions, drop us a line. We are at thegendernaut@gmail.com. Generally, we love hearing your feedback and your thoughts and your ideas. So yeah, that will be Jordan Peterson coming up soon. Should be a really good one.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I have to tell you, I was...
But I do agree with some of what he says, though. That this is the thing. Like, some of what he says, I find is spot on. So who knows?
So I'm going to send you a podcast, an episode of a different podcast where there are these two women who are very huge pro-feminist women, and they had a really interesting conversation with one of their guests, who was, if I remember correctly, was like a gay man who had dragged one of them to a Jordan Peterson talk, and they all kind of really liked it.
Interesting.
And so it'll be food for thought.
So on the next few episodes, we're going to be doing some deep and heavy dives into the topic of male shame. Quite a big topic there. But first, we're going to hear from our sponsor. The Economist is not just about economics. They also cover the arts, the environment, science, and politics with expert analysis, allowing you to make the best choices for living in today's rapidly changing world. You can get a free print copy of The Economist by texting the promo code GENDER to the number 78070.
And this week, we want to highlight an article that they published called Why India Needs Women to Work. And I was thought about a speech that Bill Gates gave a number of years ago in Saudi Arabia, where he talked basically about how Saudi Arabia will never be, you know, will never become a great economy as long as 50% of the people have been pushed down, maligned, or not being utilized. And of course, the women cheered. But this is sort of symbolic, and that story sort of resonated through with me as I was reading this great article about how there's like these subtle misogynies, even in democracies. I mean, obviously, we know that, you know, being here in America and you being in the United Kingdom, there are always subtle misogynies, and even sadly, sometimes not so subtle, but that it occurs in India and has a great deal of economic effect that is felt by women individually, but by a nation as a whole.
So there's a statistic from the article. It says if there's greater gender equality in the Indian workforce, the IMF estimates that the economy would be 27% richer, which is a pretty staggering number. So to get a free print copy of The Economist, text GENDER to 78070. Again, that's the promo code GENDER, G-E-N-D-E-R. Text that to 78070 to get your free print copy of The Economist. Okay, cool. So this week we are looking at male shame, a massive topic. We spoke to Rob Candell. He is a life coach and also a business consultant. He's based in LA. Rob is also one of the co-founders of One Taste. They are the people behind the famed practice of orgasmic meditation. And he also hosts the fab podcast Tough Love. You should subscribe to it. That's T-U-F-F-L-O-V-E, Tough Love, the podcast. We had a chat with him about male shame. So it ended up being a massive conversation that we've decided to cut into two parts because we wanted to put as much of it out as possible. So we're going to hear from Rob again next week. But this week we wanted to focus on the role that women play in male shame. And I know, Jonathan, you and Rob had a chat on the phone before we recorded. Initially, I thought that maybe you and Rob should talk alone because I thought maybe you could both be, I don't know, I felt like maybe having a woman there would, I don't know, be a bit intrusive or...
I mean, it didn't feel intrusive, but and I thought you added a great deal to the conversation. And, you know, what about yourself? I mean, did you feel like you were intruding in the locker room, so to speak? I'm using air quotes, but you can't see me doing it.
It was quite a hard conversation for me to be in, and you'll hear more of that in the second part. But it was interesting because initially I thought, you know, Jonathan and Rob, they can speak freely. Maybe they might censor themselves if I'm around. But what ended up happening was it was just quite difficult listening to things, even though neither of you said anything offensive. It was very much like we've had quite a few instances on this podcast where sort of men have wanted to be helpful towards women and they've kind of taken offense or gotten defensive and made it all about them. And I kind of felt a little bit like that was happening on my side in this conversation, which was interesting. And it also made me think of Esther Perel when I had talked to her and she was talking about the couples that she sees and how often the woman wants to help the man, but she also resents that she has to help the man, but she doesn't trust that he can do it, but she wants him to do it. And there's this whole
right,
like complicated dynamic. And I was kind of very much thinking of Esther Perel during this conversation, because on one hand, I was like, I really want to be helpful, but I don't want to listen to this. Why should I have to like help men? Then again, men need help. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and there was a moment, and we'll hear it in the interview, where it felt very much like the both of you were kind of talking past one another, where he was using a language of opportunity and you were feeling like, okay, why do I have to do this?
Yeah.
And he was like, you don't have to do this. There's no reason. And in fact, you know, he even said, you know, like if women are in these toxic situations where you know, men are unable to get past themselves. It's like, stop, like take some serious stock of that relationship. I mean, I really appreciated that he was trying to frame this as an opportunity, not a responsibility. I think that can't be emphasized enough.
Yeah, so it was interesting just that this time I was the one getting really defensive and like, why am I doing this? But, you know, because this topic of male shame is quite, I mean, first of all, it's a massive topic. And it's also, it's kind of weird to talk about because I feel like I often allude to it on the podcast and I never actually give concrete examples of what I'm talking about because I'll be talking a lot about sort of bad behaviors that come up as a result of male shame.
Sure.
And I think women know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about basically any sort of defensive, destructive behavior from men in all sorts of contexts. And I think most of the crap that women deal with through men, be it a boss, a boyfriend, a family member, it's usually some manifestation of male shame, you know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I don't know. It is quite hard to talk about because I know I talk vaguely, but then I don't really want to give, it's hard to give details because then you don't want to shame people by giving details. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's absolutely. Like, absolutely.
It's a really tough one. I think so many women I know, there are just countless examples you can think of. But
I can only imagine. I mean, I really can only imagine.
But then I don't know if for men it's like confusing hearing that because they're like, what exactly are women talking about? You know, I don't know.
I think it is. But at the same time, I mean, but this is sort of the challenge of being the dominant, you know, white, cisgender, male, heterosexual, you know, this is sort of why everybody's like, well, I don't see why there's a problem with the system. The system seems to be working fine with me. And yeah. it's just an inability to sort of put yourself into another person's shoes, which I think was what was so sort of surprising and not to get on too much of a tangent with the Me Too movement, but was so surprising for many of us was it's like you sort of intellectually appreciate it that it has happened and it has happened a lot. And you look at the statistics, but then once you already start seeing like every single woman in your life,
right,
even like the tacit like friend of yours that you met once like 3 years ago at a conference on Facebook, and it's doing a hashtag Me Too, and you're like, holy shit, this is a problem. Like, I mean, I understood it was a problem, but whoa.
Yeah, but I think even more is for men to know exactly the things they do. Because I'd say...
Absolutely.
I'm thinking in my own life, like, the sort of dozen guys or so who I feel the most pissed at or who have made me the most angry, a lot of them I don't even know. But I think it's more that they're just generally pretty miserable anyway, but they don't know the direct impact.
Let me say the most masculine thing I can, which is as long as none of those men are me, I'm good.
Okay, so we had a chat with Rob Kandel. So again, this is the first of a two-part interview. We're going to hear from him again next week. So we talked about male shame and what role women can play.
So everyone has shame. I guess that's the first thing to say. It's women and men's shame tend to be slightly different and for different reasons. The most important difference that I found in my work and my research is that women have a little more availability to discuss their shame than men. They have the ability to talk about with other women, maybe with their mothers. There's a societal permission for women to have a little more space, though it's not easy, but it's a little more easy. Men tend to get more shamed for talking about their shame. We're taught to man up. We're taught to be a man, don't be a pussy. And so the role that women tend to play in men's shame is lacking the invitation or the bridge to give men space to talk and investigate and feel and heal their shame.
Are you saying women need to be asking men about their shame more?
Take out the word need. That's okay. The most important. When you talk about the role of women and men's shame, men mm-hmm. have shame. Women okay. may or may not know that because men act like they do not have shame. Men act like we have it all together. Everything is cool. Stoic faces. Everything is fine. And instead, there's a lot of stuff going on inside of us. And mm-hmm. so we react differently than women do. Women have permission to display their emotions out in the world. Men don't. Mm-hmm. And so women assume that because they're not displaying, men are not displaying the same version of emotions, they don't have it. But we do have it. We have a lot of fear. We have a lot of shame. We have a lot of ideas. And we keep it very secret and we're very good at it. So if a woman wants to be the best friend, she has the option, the opportunity to invite, and I use these words very deliberately, invite the man to have the space to reveal to her his shame, his fear, and what he wants, his desire.
I have some slightly controversial things to say in response to that, actually.
I love that.
Because
controversy away.
One of the reasons I started this podcast was because I find, as a woman, I'm constantly dealing with men's shame and I'm sick of it. And I think by speaking to a lot of women, I saw this was a bit of a theme. In terms of, I think, at least in the women I know, we are very aware of men's shame, often because they act it out onto us. Even though it might be well-intentioned, kind of hearing men say that, you know, women should give men the space to talk about their shame, as though women don't already have to deal with men's shame through bad behavior from men. I mean, I will be honest, it does sound a little bit like women deal with men's shame enough as it is.
Well, I would call that the toxic form or the shadow form of it. You know, men don't know the impact they have on women, which is first and foremost. They might not know. And so what you talk about shame, I would actually call in terms of toxic masculinity or toxic behavior. You know, what lies underneath all this, you know, bravado that men have is, in my opinion, fear and desire that's unallowed to come out there in the world.
I feel a little bit like men need to get together and sort that out amongst each other, because I think women deal with men's shame so much as it is, and I don't think men are aware of that.
Well, there's a couple things there. first off, it's really important that it's not a need. It's a want and a desire and something from your surplus. I understand that women have many options and have the burden of dealing with men who aren't connected to their emotions, who lack emotional intelligence. Like, I really, truly get it. But what you're describing is what I think, my impression of it, is you're not dealing with men's shame. You're dealing with all the levels on top of it. You're dealing with the reaction to his shame, his poor behavior, his lack of awareness, which is awful. And I'm not saying it's any better. I'm just saying underneath it, underneath that bravado and that aggression and that, you know, the catcalls and all these things, underneath all those layers is a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. So the original question was, how does a woman, you know, deal or help? Is you bypass those levels, which is not easy, and get down to the core of it, so the behavior then can improve because the original wound is healed.
That's assuming that the man in question wants to go there with you. I've been in situations where men have behaved really badly, and, you know, I have the right to protect myself and not have to deal with that guy. I just, in a way, I don't feel, you know, I owe anything to anyone to have to deal with their issues. And so on some level, I'm going to be honest, I have a little bit of a lack of sympathy for people who don't want to go and sort their stuff out in a safe way and just want to dump it on other people. So I don't feel that as a woman, I have some sort of responsibility to sort of, like, you know, extend an olive branch to someone who's behaved badly to me. I have the right to protect myself.
Right. We're talking about two different things. Do you know that?
Yes and no, because, I mean, the manifestation of shame is like all of this sort of like bad behavior.
No, the bad behavior is the manifestation of the shame. And you keep using the word responsibility, and I just want to make sure that my point, my thesis is really clear. Mm-hmm. It's an option or an opportunity. It's not a responsibility.
Okay.
And one other thing you said is, you know, I do 100% agree that men need to get together to work this out first. My thesis is that the best way to crack a man's ego is another man. Like, my butt was royally kicked by another man and cracked my ego about my aggression and my chauvinism and my misogynistic training. The man was the one to crack it in. But I do believe that women are needed for the fine tuning after the cracking of the shell.
I was going to say, what did the man in question do to crack all of those things, the misogyny, the chauvinism?
Yeah, it's a story I often tell, especially in workshops or in my writing. So I was 29. It was my first workshop, and it was on sexuality. And I'm in this house where I go in and then go down the basement, and I'm sitting in a circle with myself, my first wife, and all these other students. And we're doing introductions. And like I said, this is my first workshop. And so it comes to me and I do my introduction and I speak and I go, I'm eloquent and I'm funny and I'm sharp. And when I was finished, I expected like everyone to clap. And I thought the teacher would say, like, please come sit with me on the couch. And then instead he said, hey, do you know your wife's crying? And she was sitting right next to me, you know, 12 inches away from me, and I turned my head and she was crying. And I saw in that moment, the first time in my life, the impact I had on women and the extent of my chauvinism and misogynism. And it was the first time that my wife had permission to truly show her emotions. And I had two choices in that moment. Option number one was to get up, throw over my shoulder, and go back to the cave. And option number two, the one I picked, was why don't I stay and learn? And that was the entire start of my whole adventure, was in that first choice. And it was horrible because then he said, who's next? And I got to sit in the depth of that uncomfortable feeling for the next hour, hour and a half, until we took a break.
So how is it that, like, what was the root of the discomfort? Like, what was the root of the pain that you had caused?
Well, the first was the lack of awareness of who I was. And like I said, the lack of awareness of my impact on my wife. You know, I grew up a firstborn New York Jew. That means that I was born that I was privileged. I was born that I was the better class, you know, the chosen people. And men have the firstborn son is like the beauty of the household. And then I grew up in the 70s and 80s in New York where, you know, misogynism and chauvinism was just part of the culture. It was really rich in locker rooms and movies. And I was just, you know, swimming, steeped in it. And the root of the shame was just my total lack of awareness of it. And this is what happens to most men, is like we're fish swimming in the sea and we're indoctrinated in this viewpoint. And I'm not giving men a free pass when it comes to it, but we just didn't know. I just didn't know in that moment. And then the male teacher, you know, with a sharp crack of the whip, brought all this awareness, and I was totally embarrassed about my lack of awareness that she was crying. And I was so self-centered and I was so self-involved and so unaware that I could hurt the person I called my most special person in my life.
The thing is, when we talk about the role women have in male shame, my main thought was about not so much the role women have in healing, but in setting this up. Because that's something I wonder a lot. And you kind of talked about your upbringing as well. More that sort of, how is it that mothers raise sons which kind of can induce shame? Because I feel like probably that's where women can be most powerful in terms of how we raise sons, the messages we give sons when they're, you know, when they're young, and how they hear women talking about men.
Sure. I mean, that's a whole different tangent. So let's go down that route. So, again, the main thing that I see in terms of raising a son is the diminishing of his emotions and the inability for him to feel free and feel right in showing his emotions. Boys and girls tend to be raised differently and they're treated differently in school. And so it's the shutting down, it's the locking down of a boy's emotions. And also, we really follow, there's a lot where we feel an alliance to our mother. And if there's mothers who bad talk their husbands or speak poorly about their partners or other men, we're like sponges pulling in that information to truly find out, you know, what it is. We want to please our mother. We want to be connected to our mother. And so we pick up those angles of her anger.
Because I often, it's interesting you say this, because this is something I've seen a lot in men I've been close to, where there might have been a bad dynamic within the family or something. And it's almost like the mother is turning to her sons for validation, which can be very damaging later on. Because then you get a young man who doesn't really have a sense of self. And it's something that is quite surprisingly common. So often I wonder, with this sort of with this movement we have now, with like women's equality and women demanding their rights more, and especially in the emotional realm, you know, women sort of standing up for what they want from their husbands, what they want from their intimate life and stuff, I feel like that will probably have a really good impact in terms of lessening men's shame, because then there'll be less of a need to get these things from one's male children, you know. And I really feel like women being more fulfilled and feeling like they have the right to assert their needs, I think that's kind of like it's going to have a really powerful effect on the next generation of men.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole world is truly changing. We're seeing a lot of differences in society and changing of power structures. More women are entering college, getting graduate degrees, entering the workforce. I'm not saying we're even close to equal. I'm saying there's just been a change. And so women I've seen are changing their need around men, whereas 30 years ago, they needed men for financial security, to get a car loan, to buy a house. That's no longer the case. And so women are having more choice about the partners they want. And in doing so, hopefully they'll live happier, more fulfilled lives because they're making choices from that independence, which will trickle down to their sons.
So there are two things that kind of entered into my head as both of you were speaking. I remember there was a quote, and I cannot remember for the life of me who said it, but I remember it was that mothers many times raise their sons into the men they wish their husbands could have been.
Yes.
And
this is what I mean about then you raise sons who have a very shoddy sense of self and they need sort of validation from women, but they don't really know who they are. And that's like a very destructive thing that's surprisingly quite common. So let's just get back to the question, what role do women have to play in male shame? So, yeah, Rob, what do you think women can do to help men deal with their shame?
Well, the first thing is, if you're with a man who doesn't want to work on it, then I would really, really question that relationship. I know underneath it, we have fear of abandonment. We have fear of, you know, pretty much dying alone. You know, for me, it's dying alone under a bridge, homeless. That's kind of the scene. You know, we all have that. And, you know, I coach, you know, time and time again, people in subpar, you know, violent, toxic relationships. And I ask why they stay. And the answer is because I don't think there's anything better out there. Well, there's better stuff out there. And even to be alone and to fall in love with your own company is more pleasurable than being in a toxic relationship. So if you're with a guy, and guys need to step up, that's another thesis of mine, like in society, women are really stepping up and empowering and doing the work and growing. And there's been a lot of space for them to expand and they've taken it, which is wonderful. And guys need to do the same thing, is we need to step up and, you know, hang out and interact and relate to the modern woman, which is different than what we watched on TV. So,
and Rob, you mentioned when we were talking, you mentioned two things that I just think are really important to bring up and maybe for you to expand upon. Number one, you talked about like how men a lot of times are quitting, mm-hmm. and also how like, you know, there is a very big difference. And maybe you just alluded to this and maybe I'm imagining this, but you sort of alluded to the fact that, you know, like stepping up and engaging being so much different than sort of this toxic idea of asserting. Mm-hmm. And asserting one's place, to, you know, sort of like, you know, I am dude, hear me roar kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole subculture in Japan that I've been reading about, and they're under 30, they're virgins, and they have absolutely no intention or desire to interact with women. They have video games, they have porn, they have sex dolls, and they're just quitting. There's a whole group of men who are just like, no more women, and becoming celibate and deciding. So there, you know, it's a subtopic. And so those are the extreme versions of men really just not stepping up to the plate to get to the next level. Like I said, where the use of video game is magnified, porn usage is off the charts. There's so much attention to avoiding, you know, the call to adventure, to step up and grow. And it's detrimental. In Japan, the whole societal setup. The whole financial structure is caused by less kids coming into Japan because, you know, there's a significant portion of Japanese men just quitting. So my hope is just to inspire men to say, I know it's difficult. I know you got to get out of your status quo. I get it. And you can do it. And it's worth it because the growth to learn to interact and succeed with a modern woman is the best adventure ever. And your own personal growth and happiness will expand immensely. There was a second part. Did I miss the second part?
Well, the second part just being like that toxic nature of men feeling the need to assert themselves.
Right.
You know, in a, you know, like the men's rights movement, you know, that you and I were mentioning and talking about, you know, which is absurd, but seems to be like the way that so many men sort of lash out with their shame in kind of a, like in a public square kind of manner.
Sure. I mean, there's a conversation of force versus power. The idea is really you have two choices. You can use force or you can use power. And power is the stepping up, the internal validation, the internal awareness, the self-responsibility, the education, and to step up to say, you know, my feelings are hurt or this doesn't feel good. And then there's force, which the untrained tends to use. We use dominance. We use aggression. We use our strength and to force others into submission. And the untrained uses force. And the enlightened and those on the path learn to engage with their power to communicate and act in a collaborative fashion with women rather than antagonistic.
You know, again, what is the opportunity for women to sort of both not have to deal with the burdens, you know, that Naz was referencing earlier, but at the same time, you know, the opportunity that you made the comment to sort of, you know, that your wife uses, you know, to engage and to sort of help and allow that shame to sort of naturally work itself out as opposed to toxically create a greater level of shit in the world.
Right. Well, the thing I say often is that it's our opportunity in relationship to create a space for the truth to be told and rewarded. I mean, just today I saw a part of myself. I saw a habit that arose and it's sneaky. And it was underhanded, and it was basically cutting my wife out of the loop. And I was like, I sat with myself for a second, and I was just like, oh my God, I just, you know, was going to act in this, you know, really unconscious manner. And so I'm glad I caught it. And then the second thing I did is like, hey, may I tell you a self-discovery? This is all over text while I'm at work. And she's like, yeah, please. And I said, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then it took her a good minute or two or three or four to respond. And I'm like, uh-oh. And then she wrote back and she's like, you know, when you first told me that, the first thing I did was to think it was about me, make it about me. And then I just saw you revealing a pattern for yourself. And then she said, thank you for the truth. And thank you for the continued self-discovery of who you are. Thank you for sharing with me. And so I didn't have to tell her this thing. She didn't have to receive it, but in the sharing and the receiving, this woman has enabled me to pull all the things out of my shadow, all the little skeletons out of my closet, and I show it to her, and some are really hard to see, and some cause heated discussions, but in the end, she truly knows who I am, and that I don't feel like I need to hide anything from her. I don't feel like I have to put on a social media-induced profile or a good mask to get along. She actually creates a space for me to be all of myself. That is the greatest gift you can give to another person. And, you know, this is man-man relationship, woman-woman. You know, there's so many genders these days. You can pick whichever. The point is that if you create the space, and this is not just women, if you create the space for that allow to pull from the closet and still be approved of, that's the way you help a man optimize and handle and know his shame. Otherwise, he's pushing it down. He's covering it with all other things, including the aggression and the bad behavior. And that's just not healthy. And it doesn't solve the problem.
You heard from Rob Kendell on this episode of The Gender Knot.
It was hosted by me. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And it was hosted by me. I'm Jonathan Freeman. Our co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell.
We'll be back next week with more. Bye for now.
Talk to you later.